I'm Abby Lindsay Clark, and you are listening to Radio Lifestyle. Welcome to the first of a series of programs related to the coronavirus. Today, I have the pleasure of interviewing Dominique White, who is going to share with us her personal experience of suffering the coronavirus. Hi, Dominique. Thank you so much for being on the program today.
Well, thank you for inviting me. It's lovely to be here.
So a little bit about you to start off with. I always like our listeners to sort of get a feel for the person that I'm interviewing. So if you can tell us a little bit about you, where you're from, when did you arrive in Spain, this kind of thing, that would be great.
All right. Yeah, well, I'm from the UK and I came here. There was another virus going around a few years ago and it was called the Millennium Bug. And I definitely caught that and I needed to make a big change in my life. So I thought, new challenge. I will move to Spain. I got a friend of mine had done the Leonardo da Vinci. It's a scholarship that's available from the European Union, and I applied. And within 6 weeks, I was on a plane over to Madrid, which was absolutely fantastic.
Fantastic.
And yes,
well done.
I'm still here.
Oh, wonderful. Goodness me. So, is this a place that you've completely fallen in love with? Would you ever live anywhere else?
Nope. I really wouldn't live anywhere else. I can't imagine living anywhere else. I really can't. I am so happy in Madrid. It's the perfect place for me. And I think for a lot of expats like myself.
Well, why would you say that? Because of the lifestyle or the sort of type of life that you can, or opportunities, for example, you can have here? What part of it is what makes you say that?
I don't know. Well, there's several things. First of all, I have found my niche, my family here with the British Scouting Overseas. Becoming a parent has definitely made me more involved in Madrid, in the culture in Madrid. But the thing is that obviously I'm not Spanish. So what I found is a whole community of not necessarily Brits, we're from all over the place, who have made a lifestyle choice to stay in Madrid, because the quality of life is so good for bringing up your children. The job opportunities are here. The salaries are fine. You know, there are places where you can earn a higher salary, but perhaps the quality of life isn't what you will receive here. It's not even a trade-off. I'd say everything we have here in Madrid is a bonus. And it was a no-brainer. The other opportunity was to go to London. Uh-huh. And I decided to stay in Madrid, and I don't regret it. In fact, I'm delighted. I'm honoured to live here.
It's a wonderful lifestyle living here. I have to say, I feel very much the same as you. So what do you do for a living? Can you tell us a bit about your work?
Yeah, apart from writing blogs and being a scout leader and things like that, I do have a job. I work in a translation agency as a project manager.
Ah, wonderful.
And we do a lot of work with the European Union and the Courts of Justice, European Courts of Justice. So it's an interesting, quite stressful at times, but very interesting job, very varied, which is what I enjoy.
What kind of projects do you work on there, to give us an idea?
Oh, at the moment I'm working on a patent, European Patent Office. And in fact, we were just discussing yesterday that perhaps the project we're working on might be key workers, because we're translating the patents for microbiology from French, from English to French.
Wow,
and
fantastic.
With the whole rise of the need for, they're looking for a virus, what they call it, immunology, then they might need some of these patents. They need to look at what's out there already and what's new and what needs to be patented before they bring out the wonderful vaccine.
Yeah.
Which we will then all use, and we'll be able to get over COVID-19. So yes, it's methodical, it's precise translation work. But I'm
very interesting.
Not the translator. I just make sure that the team know what they're doing.
Yeah. So it's more sort of like a coordinator, I guess.
That's right. We're all over the place. The team are in Canada and France, in the United States, in England. They're all over the place, and so it's all online.
Fascinating. So for you, working from home, at least it's been okay. The whole lockdown, you've been able to carry on with your project. Okay,
that's good.
That's great news. So talking about the virus, I know that you have sadly been through it and suffered it. And I really want to kind of get a feel about, you know, what were your first thoughts when you began to feel the possible symptoms of the virus? How did you feel?
Well, to be honest, I should have recognized the symptoms before I, you know, when I started feeling them, because I had been warned. I'm in a WhatsApp group with the person who immediately came down with the virus. This was on the 8th of March, and let everyone know through WhatsApp. And I didn't actually start showing symptoms until the 19th of March on Father's Day, which is, you know, quite 10 days later.
Yes, quite late.
And, you know, maybe I would have been more, if I didn't take it seriously, because at that time, we're talking about the beginning of March, we all thought that the symptoms were high temperatures, flu-like, and a sore throat.
Yes.
In my case, it began with severe headaches and lethargy, you know, quite bad tiredness. Now, I have had headaches before, and I kind of thought the tiredness was just, as you know, I've got my kids at home now. I don't know. I didn't really think, oh, my goodness.
Typical of everyday tiredness you just thought you were experiencing, I suppose.
Yes, yes, exactly. Then came the sore throat. And it was a very, very sore throat. And I thought, goodness, this has been quite a severe headache. And now it's a very sore throat. Okay, but no temperature. I didn't get a temperature. And you know what? In the whole 5 weeks that I was actually being treated for coronavirus, I never once had a high temperature. So it's, again, I'm now very cautious about talking about coronavirus with people, saying, listen, you've just got to listen to your body.
Yes.
And be aware that there are more symptoms. We're discovering symptoms all the time.
Yes.
And if you don't think you feel well, then speak to your GP about it.
Of course. I think one of the very difficult things about this virus is that, as you say, everyone seems to be reacting very differently to it. There isn't a sort of standard, you will have a fever, you will have a sore throat, you know, and you will have that dry cough they talk about a lot. I think that's one of the things that's complicating it a lot for people and also for doctors, because it's difficult to recognize it, really, because everyone is different.
That's
and
it.
Then in theory,
that's
there's
it.
Some people with no symptoms at all. So,
and they're just walking around.
And they're walking around. Yes. Yeah.
We don't even know, right? If you are walking around asymptomatic, you don't even know how long you are contagious. And that's something that really is concerning.
Yeah.
Anyway, to go back to the symptoms and what happened with. And this is something I would like to point out, because it seems to be a lot of people, this has been the defining thing for them. It's been on the fifth or sixth day after beginning to show symptoms, you suddenly go downhill.
Mm-hmm.
And that was definitely my case. Until then, I thought, whatever, it wasn't really that much. But then I got the bad cough. I was coughing up a lot of phlegm. It was really, really horrible.
Oh,
and I was...
Poor you.
I was really unwell. And so that's when I rang the doctors.
Okay. You just stayed at home, I guess, resting until then, yeah?
I was just resting. I just thought, I don't feel bad enough to go to the doctors. So I rang them and they said, oh, come in for a chest x-ray. I said, well, can you send me someone to pick me up? No, you've got to make your own way.
Mm.
Now, I didn't want to go on public transport. I didn't want to expose anyone to this virus.
Of course.
I decided to stay at home. I said to them, I don't have a temperature. Okay, I admit that you are asking me to go in for a chest x-ray, and I am deciding not to. They accepted that. They got me, every time they rang me from then on, they got me to check my temperature. I had to breathe down the phone to them. I had to hold my breath, and they were checking my lung capacity. I got worse, and so they said, listen, it's probably a chest infection as well, so let's give you some antibiotics, which were great. They got rid of the phlegm, but then I got the skin lesions, which
I've heard about that.
Like the textbook, everything.
Poor you. But that's quite uncommon, though, I think. Is it that symptom with the skin?
I don't know how common it is, but it was it was irritating, but I confused it. I thought maybe I'd eaten some food, which I've got a gluten intolerance, and I thought maybe it was the gluten rather than coronavirus.
Well,
we've been following this live. You know, it's been I've been developing the symptoms, and it's been in real time.
Yeah,
the doctors and the nurses have been wonderful, wonderful.
Oh, that's so good to hear. And I've heard so many amazing things about the way they've been working and helping people here. It's impressive. It really is.
Yeah.
Did they, after you had all your checks, did they then send you home, or did you have to stay in the hospital
for a while?
I
never once left my apartment. I have been diagnosed, and I'm one of the statistics, and I'm now on the list for the antibody test without ever having left this apartment.
Wow.
Yes, I know, but it's because they were able to do that because I had been directly contact traced by someone who has done the test, who tested positive, and we were, you know, that they were said that gave them enough confidence to add me to the statistics. Where there's another friend of mine who doesn't know how she got coronavirus, and she is convinced she's not one of the statistics on the, you know, the numbers that come out. But she still received the same treatment I did. You know, wonderful. It doesn't matter, but it gets you thinking about how many people really have got it, have had it, who's still contagious, and when, you know, when's this going to be? Is there ever going to be a herd immunity? We just don't know. It's all brand new.
I think that's the hardest thing, as you say. It's just it's the big unknown. It's just we do not understand this virus, and that's what's making it so difficult for the professionals to, you know, grasp it and to do something, you know, about it. And so, yeah, it's a very, very complicated situation. Now, you have children, right? So how did you manage home life, getting over the virus with children there and having to self-isolate?
Well, self-isolation was an experience. Now, to be honest, by the time I got the diagnosis, it was too late. You know, I'd been around my kids for 10 days, you know, blissfully ignorant.
Of course.
And so we implemented some strict measures. I took over one of the bathrooms that was for me. I slept in a sleeping bag in the living room, and I was able to open the windows straight away in the first thing in the morning, you know, and I just spent my whole time in my office. So I was in contact with them at all. And we made sure that that my husband didn't leave the house for 7 days, you know, that because we realized, you know, by the time he'd been in contact with me, it was no point in him doing 14 days. And the GP was the one. No, it was one of the nurses who said, no, 7 days is enough. As long as he doesn't show any symptoms, we assume he is not contagious, because otherwise we wouldn't have got the shopping. We would have had to do everything online.
Of course.
So we just bunked.
So he's been okay. He hasn't had any symptoms.
Nothing at all.
And children, no problems?
No, they're all asymptomatic. But I have no doubt that they'll be carrying antibodies. We've all been under the same roof.
Of course. Yeah. So did you have any moments where you felt sort of afraid when you were at a really, really low point, physically speaking, and you were thinking, oh, God, you know, I hope I'm not going to get worse. I hope, you know, I'm not going to go downhill here, you know. Did you have any of those feelings?
Not at all. I think I would consider myself as having had a mild, prolonged case of COVID-19, because it has definitely been almost 5 weeks with symptoms. But not that rapid decline. I was worried on the fifth day, which was the day that I thought, okay, it could get worse, but it didn't. And then it was paracetamol, liquids, antibiotics, and then an inhaler, and they're just keeping in touch with me. So it's a virus. You know, people get viruses all the time, and it's we just have to be aware that I'm lucky. I live close enough to hospital. If I'd suddenly got downhill, I would have made my own way to it. If I was living in one of the villages, I don't know how I would feel, but I live in Madrid. So it was, I took the decision to stay at home, watch my symptoms. I had a telephone number I could ring, and I just made a slow recovery. And that was it. I feel very, very lucky.
So I guess that's what you've taken from it. Because now that, you know, you're, would you say you are 100% now? You've completely got over it?
No. I wouldn't. And I am waiting for, I'd like to have a check, because I have a feeling that the oxygen levels of my blood, I'm feeling very lightheaded still. And I've started doing exercise, and it's not low blood pressure. It's not, you know, I went to the pharmacy and checked my low blood pressure. It wasn't. So there's something there. I'm not being a hypochondriac. I'm not psychosomatic. I'd like to find out. Yes. I've got a friend who reads microbiology magazines, you know, digests. And she said, oh, there have been cases where oxygen levels aren't receiving, you know, that people have gone through COVID-19 and they don't the blood isn't getting oxygenated, even though the lungs are fine and my lungs are fine. There's not, you know, there's no no pneumonia. So I'll wait and I'll see. But I wouldn't, when the GP rang me, I said, no, listen, I still feel that I've got symptoms and yeah. I'd like to get them checked out. But it's not an emergency. It's just something we'd, you know, get to the bottom of.
Yeah, exactly. It's something you'll keep an eye on and make sure.
I will.
It doesn't get worse. Yeah. But do you feel that it's changed your life in any way in particular? It sort of made you look at things differently? Sort of this, not just your personal experience, but the whole, just sort of watching everything that's going on around us too. Just here in Spain, but all over.
Everybody will have COVID stories, lockdown stories, coronavirus memoirs, whatever you want to call them, we'll all have them. And I think it's a great time of reflection. And for many expats, I think it's the time for them to embrace Madrid and say, yes, this is where I live. This is my home. I belong here. We are welcome and we are part of the fabric of this city. Never felt so delighted to live here and just felt, you know, even when I gave birth, I had two children here and it was a wonderful experience. But this going through lockdown in Madrid with Spaniards, it's yes. I am delighted, and I think many other people are having positive experiences as well. It's not great to have lockdown and have people suffering from COVID. And you know, I lost my former boss.
Oh, I'm
passed
so
away
sorry.
From yeah, and then you know, as you say, yes, but he was 85. Yes. But he needn't have been taken by this virus.
Exactly. So, exactly. You know, yeah. It's not about it's age. It's you know, it wasn't. Shouldn't
there's
have been his
ache.
Time yet. You know. But yeah, it's very, very tough. I know a lot of people who've been through, you know, some pretty tragic times. So it'll be sort of a lot of people trying to rebuild, I guess, afterwards, you know, rebuild
yes.
their lives in a different kind of way. Or the new norm, as they keep calling it, you know, the government here.
Our
new, you know, the new norm, I suppose, is the best translation for that.
Yes.
But yeah, anyway, so it'll be interesting to see, you know, what happens as well sort of afterwards as we all start getting back to life again, back to living again.
Exactly, exactly.
So from that point of view, that's what you would say is the sort of positive outcome from such a
yes.
horrid experience.
Yes.
Yeah, and so what else was I wanting to ask you for the listeners? Yes, what message would you give others who are currently suffering from the virus?
Well, first of all, like I said before, listen to your body, you know, mm-hmm. because we don't, there's no list. The list seems to be added to of what we can get as what can be considered a symptom of coronavirus. So I think if we've got to, first of all, let's get our contact tracing sorted out. If anyone says to you they've been in touch with anyone with coronavirus, and then you start noticing something, then, you know, pay attention to it. And the sooner the better. Don't feel that you're being a hypochondriac or you're overreacting. You probably aren't. Another thing is just to really, really list every single symptom. You know, whatever you're feeling, list it, write it down. So, yeah, I'd say that. And also get yourself to the hospital if you're feeling unwell. Go to the hospital. They've got it's all set up so that we don't pick up the virus by going there, and we don't, you know, we get seen straight away. So it's that's my message. Is, you know, it's a personal decision whether or not to go to hospital. I chose not to because I live within 20 minutes of a hospital,
mm-hmm.
but I think people should know that they can go and they're welcome there, and it's the best place to be. Not to ignore symptoms, and you know, even if you don't want to go to the hospital, at least ring your GP. You know, they're all, they've got people answering the phones the whole time, and put your mind at ease.
Yes. One of the other things that I'd like to know your opinion about is how you feel that the coronavirus situation has been handled here in Spain, sort of from start up until where we are currently. What are your feelings about that, sort of from a political point of view, financial point of view, as much as a sort of structural point of view to deal with the virus as such?
Well, Abby, you know, we have to be very careful when we are foreigners living in, you know, we are guests in this country. And I think we mustn't jump to conclusions. We can have an opinion, but the bottom line, we are visitors here. We're gratefully we've been embraced by the Spanish community, and
absolutely,
I don't feel that I can talk about the politics with any. I can't even vote in Spain. However, what I can say is that there are no good answers, and I tend to listen to what's going on in the UK more than what's going on in Spain. And then when I catch up on Spain, it seems to be the very parallel experience. And there seems in Spain, what I've noticed from the politicians that I see on the television and the journalists who are asking them questions, there seems to be a lot of goodwill. And so I think with that attitude and with the Spanish natural ability of just accepting things and making the best of it. You know, we're the people who we clap every day, you know, not just once a week, let's clap for the NHS. No, every day, let's get out and clap. You know, it's a really, really wonderful experience. And the politicians are probably making mistakes, but then so are everyone. So is everyone, because this is a brand new situation. I would not like to be in the shoes of any politician in any part of the world at the moment.
Very difficult times for them. Yeah.
So I'd say thumbs up to Spain. Thumbs up.
Yeah. Absolutely. So do you have any friends or family either here or in Spain or in the UK who have suffered the virus as well?
Yes. I've got friends here in Spain. Mm-hmm. We're part of a group that we've moved online. We're now having Zoom calls. We're called Costa Women Madrid. Anyway, we started off, the first person was me. So, I like to, be the first one off the block to get coronavirus. And then a couple of weeks or about a week later, then someone else. And then last week we were on the call and someone else has just been diagnosed as well. So
goodness me.
We're not laughing. It's terrible. But so there's this little group of my friends that we're all kind of dropping like flies. And then obviously I told you about my boss and a few other friends whose parents, elderly parents have caught it. And it's some have made it, some haven't. It's really
so
quite
sad.
But I do know that I haven't passed it on to anyone. I'm sure. I haven't passed it on to anyone. And my family haven't. So it is around. It's a very contagious virus.
It is.
Yeah. But in the UK, nobody.
Nobody.
Interesting. My family are in the north of England, and so far, touch wood, they're fine.
Good. I'm very happy to hear that. The numbers over there are pretty high as well, aren't they?
In the UK, I know,
yes.
Shocking.
Yeah, they are. So I was quite shocked to hear the other day on the news the latest figures, So I'm very happy to hear that all of yours are doing okay and well and happy. Now I wanted to speak to you about this beautiful letter which you wrote. You basically, it was read out on the Blank podcast with Giles and Jim earlier this month.
That's right.
Oh, actually, last month now, in April, I believe. You wrote this letter about your experience. Who were you kind of directing this letter to?
The BBC have Radio 4, they have a programme called PM, which is like a news digest. And they started asking listeners to send in their COVID chronicles. They wanted like a slice of people's lives with a day in a life. So this is just one day in a life of my life, and it was when I was still self-isolating. So I wrote it to them. They weren't able to use it because it was time sensitive, I'd mentioned a date, and by the time I sent it to them, it was, I'd written it in real time. Everything at the moment for me is real time. So
of course.
I said, this is a shame. I'm going to pass it on to a few other people. And the Blank podcast picked it up and they read it out, which I was I'm very grateful for, because it's quite humbling to hear your words written read out by someone's voice that you listen to all the time. It's a podcast that I listened to. I kind of binge listened to during when I was here on my own, because I worked my way through. I was still doing project management while in self-isolation.
Wow.
But I was doing less hours, and I couldn't be in the kitchen, I couldn't be with the kids,
of course.
Be out. So I was listening to podcasts, and then I send them my letter. They publish it. They read it out, and I just felt really lucky. I sent the link to you, and you said that you thought it was lovely, and I thought, well, great. Even though it's not time sensitive for other people, it was time sensitive for the BBC, unfortunately.
Yes, it's a shame. I feel that those kind of letters. Well, actually, we're going to be hearing this letter in a minute. I feel these kind of letters don't really have a timeline on them. I think, you know, we're going to be wanting to kind of listen to people's stories of what happened back then, you know, what happened to you 2 months ago. You know, it's not something that I feel is going to sort of have a time limit on it, you know. So I do feel these kind of words, our listeners would very much like to listen to and hear and sort of relive with you as such. So if you would like to read out the letter, I'd really love you to. That would be great.
I'm absolutely delighted to do so. I feel very grateful. So I will, I'll read it. As I said, it was a day in a life, and it's my COVID chronicle. So I awake on the sofa, wrapped in a sleeping bag. My alarm clock reminded me that it's 7:30. I get up and rush to open the patio door and cross the balcony to open the French windows of my 7th floor flat, letting cool, fresh air flow in from the nearby mountains straight into my living room, hopefully dispersing COVID-19 germs that I may still be propagating. I quickly bundle up my sleeping things and remove them from this space that will soon be occupied by my kids doing their online schoolwork face to face on opposite sides of the dining table. I don my mask and gloves and begin preparing their breakfasts, a ritual carried on from the days I used to leave home before they woke to go on my long commute downtown in time for office opening hours. I leave their breakfast on trays outside their rooms and scuttle away to hide in my self-isolation space, my office. It is April the 1st, and I have hit another milestone in my life. I came to Madrid for 3 months in the year 2000. 20 years later, still here, I cannot imagine living anywhere else. Madrid is so much my home that I blog about it all the time, with some madrileños claiming I know their city better than they do. I was 26 when I took up an offer to spend 3 months in Spain, immersing myself in her culture and doing work experience. Everything from board and lodgings, travel expenses, flights and language classes were paid for by the European Union. Not until I began this Spanish adventure had I ever considered myself a European. Now, 20 years on, my British passport estranges me from who I have become. I check my emails and social media feeds. There have been moments during these two decades when old friends and well-meaning acquaintances get in touch to find out how I'm getting on. Usually when my adopted country or Madrid hits the international headlines, motives such as the Prestige oil spill or the horrific terror attack here in Madrid in 2004, or there was a plane crash in Barajas Airport in 2008. And more recently, people got in touch when Madrid became one of the first capital cities in Europe to ban polluting older cars within the city centre. Now they are getting in touch with me because Madrid is the epicentre of the coronavirus outbreak. I begin my replies, admitting that I am one of the statistics that they are hearing about in the headlines, that it is my children's local ice rink that has been converted into a temporary morgue, and the convention centre close to our apartment has become a field hospital stretching over three halls. But my mind wanders to the round of applause that echoes down my street every evening at 8 p.m. Yes, we are clapping the workers who are keeping us safe, but we're also clapping each other, thanking and being thanked for the effort of living under lockdown. Quarantine may have silenced our streets so that birdsong replaces bustle during the day, but it has not quenched our pride of living in the city that never fails to bring out the best in us. I was no fool to move to Madrid on April the 1st. It was the wisest decision I ever made. So there you go.
It's wonderful. Thank you so much. It's beautifully
written. That's right. Thank you.
And I know that people will really love listening to your letters. It's wonderful. It really is. And just, you know, evokes emotions and gives people things to think about, you know, and because I'm sure a lot of people will be sort of nodding as I was listening to it going, yes, yes, you know, because a lot of people will have shared a lot of those emotions, those feelings that you're expressing. You mentioned a blog. Is there a blog that you would like to share with the listeners?
Oh, I write for several blogs. I am a pen for hire.
Is there a particular blog that you would like to share with people?
I write, yes. Obviously, my flagship blog is Kids in Madrid, www.kidsinmadrid.com. Mm-hmm. And that's where you find most of my content. Yes, I give a lot of advice to people on how to bring up their kids in Madrid, especially if you're English speaking and don't really know the ropes. So that's the blog, yeah.
Brilliant. And then you also work with the Scouts.
Yes, oh yes. Yeah, we're the British Scouts.
British
here
Scouts.
In Madrid. Yes, it's been going for 10 years and I joined 6 years ago. And with my children, you join with your children and they then ask you if you are interested in helping out. And then they point you in the direction of the online training. And I just fell hook, line and sinker, absolutely loved it. I'm still involved. I took them, some of the Scouts, to Northumberland, to the northeast of England, on a trip in March a couple of years ago, and we met some local some Scouts from the northeast, did a wonderful tour, went to Hogwarts.
Fantastic.
And it was just wonderful for these children. It was great. Yeah, they had a wonderful time. It was obviously the Scouting ethos is for everyone, all ages, and it's just we needed it to be British Scouting here so that the children who maybe have been in the UK for a few years then come to Spain for a couple of years, they continue with their Scouting career or their Scouting journey, and then they go back to the UK and they haven't missed out on anything. So that's, we take mainly children who are have got British parents or American parents, English speaking parents, and with a genuine link with Scouting in their home country. So yeah, it's
brilliant.
It's great.
Really,
we meet
work
at St. George's School, and we're online at the moment, doing a lot of online activities because we can't meet in person.
Yeah, that's how's that working out? I guess with Skype and everything.
I tell you what, I had to step back a bit for a few weeks because I was unwell.
Poor
and
you.
I've been watching it. We've got a wonderful Beaver leader who is I think he works in tech, and he's managed to set up so many different rooms. And then there's another person who has Zoom anyway as part of her academy. So she was lending Zoom. I mean, they're just the parents and the leaders in our Scout troop make it happen. It's not one person, it's everyone. And
the team,
the skill base is wonderful. And the goodwill, the parents, and they had all the kids camping indoors last weekend because it was St. George's Day.
Oh.
And they all, you know, that couldn't have been done. The kids couldn't have done that just with us, you know, with the leaders. They needed their parents,
of
and the
course.
Parents were right behind them, letting them, you know. I think one of them, a drone flew over their house when they were roasting marshmallows. I think they might have been informed that you're not allowed to do that. But apart from that, yeah, we might have been infringing on some laws that we didn't know about. We have a Spanish policeman who's one of our leaders,
brilliant.
Alberto, and he makes sure we stick within
the
Spanish
rules. Yeah, I was going to say, what did he say about that with the marshmallows?
I actually didn't see his comment. I haven't seen his comment on that. Particular activity. But no, they're doing great, and I'm looking forward to getting back in the fold once I'm 100%. I just
wonderful.
When I do something, I do 100%, and when I know that I can't, I just let others get on with it, and they're doing such a good job. It's the kids are enjoying every minute of it.
That's
it's
brilliant.
It's such a strange experience for everybody,
of course this
lockdown.
That's just what the children need, you know. They need entertainment.
Yes.
Like that, because it is so tough for them, you know.
Yes,
at least
yes.
And now we've got a little bit of freedom, you know, we're able to go out a little bit with the children. But I think it's been very challenging for a lot of them.
Well, just so they know, they belong to the scouting family as well as their school family and their family family. You know, they've got their scouting family as well, and that really, I'm very proud of that. I must say, I'm proud that we were able to do this. It's a wonderful, wonderful experience. It's great for the adults and great for the kids.
It is fantastic. Well, that's great, and thank you so much for sharing your feelings and your thoughts and your experiences with us. It's been absolutely wonderful.
Thank you.
And yeah, keep us posted on how you're doing.
I will. I'm pretty sure I won't have any more COVID symptoms. I think I've had them all, but if I get another one, I'll let you know.
Okay. Thank you so much, Dominique. So we'll be back next week with another program, interviewing some more people. And Dominique, thank you so much for coming on the program.